Okay. Resolution 22-505, moved by Councilor Keckman, seconded by Councilor Zulak. Be it resolved, Council of the Corporation of the Township of Keller does hereby reconvene into open session of Council at
6:26
p.m. Call for question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carries. Great.
How's
it going?
Good.
Can you grab that
Whatever it is.
Didn't realize.
Didn't
get sworn in yet.
No, I didn't. I wasn't here, so. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Want me to come over there? Yeah. Okay. In the municipality of the Township of McKellar, you solemnly promise and declare that I will faithfully and impartially exercise this office to the best of my knowledge and ability. I have not received and will not receive any payment or reward or promise thereof for the exercise of this office in a biased, corrupt, or improper manner. I will disclose any pecuniary interest, direct or indirect, in accordance with the Municipal Conflict of Interest Act. I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty King Charles III, and make the solemn promise and declaration conscientiously, believing it to be true, and knowing it is of the same force and effect as if made under oath. First, I'm going to pledge anything to King Charles. True.
Yes, just sign it.
Legibly or sign it?
Dave will get used to it.
It'll be just simply different from somebody else anyway, so.
Wow. You were a doctor at one time.
Meetings are ordered. I have resolution 22-506, moved by Councillor Haskin, seconded by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, Council of the Corporation and Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held December 6, 2022. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Let's go through the respect and acknowledgement declaration. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. And we'll do the roll call once again in case somebody left after the closed session or somebody arrived.
Councillor Morley Haskam.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Mary Smith.
Greg Gossett.
Councillor Debbie Zulak.
Councillor Mike Kapanen.
I'm Watkins and Clark Administrator.
And David Moore, there. Are there any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. There's no public meeting this evening. We have three delegations. 10 minutes each, but we may run over if necessary. The first one is 12.1 Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee, the Pollinator Patch, and David Suzuki Foundation application. And I guess we have Jennifer from Zoom, or is there somebody here in the audience?
I was there too.
Oh, excellent. We'll give you a microphone there.
So. No, sign those because those are the resolutions. This is just everyone's copy. I know it's confusing.
What do I do with that?
That's just for your.
Oh, copy. I just keep it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. These ones go to the table. Sorry, Axie. How's it going?
Good. Good evening, Council. For the meeting record, my surname is Leigh, L-E-I-G-H-L, first initial A, and I am here on behalf of the Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee to talk to you about a matter that is not officially a financial request. We are simply moving a budget item over from 2022 to 2023. We had planned to do a pollinator patch project in 2022. Unfortunately, we didn't get our ducks lined up in time, it being a time-sensitive matter, we've decided we'll push it into 2023. We'd set aside $2,000 from our 2022 budget, and that's the budget we will continue with in 2023. We are hoping to pair up with the David Suzuki Foundation. They've got a program, I think they call it the Butterfly Ranger Program. However, their application process doesn't start until late January, February, so I am not clear on the details and the support that they'll give us, but I do know that there will be something helpful for our group. The intent is to create something that citizens will take a look at and say this is an alternative to grass and will support an environment that is friendly towards pollinators. I don't know if you have any questions.
I just had one. Are you looking at township property, or are you looking at private property?
Well, yes, we are. So I apologize. We are looking at township property. There is an existing garden here, just off. Sorry, I'm lost. That way? Yes. It's seen some better days. It needs some TLC. It's a good-sized patch. So our hope is to go in the spring, clean it up, augment what's there, and put up some signage so that the takeaway message is taken away. We will be scouting some other spots that will have some visibility that hopefully we'll be able to get permission to use. What we'd like to do is convert an area of grass into a pollinator patch so people get the idea that this is an alternative to a lawn.
I'm just wondering if Ina has a list of township-owned properties. I think that would be useful. You would know where these properties were.
I can provide him with a list of the township properties.
Thank you.
You mentioned your budget as well to carry over. Any idea of the budget for this year? January, I guess. Is all the budget used up from 2022, or is it still some there?
I can speak to that if you'd like. Yeah, we have a budget for 2023 on the agenda for the Lake Stewardship Committee on Thursday, and so no, we haven't used up our budget for 2022 yet. And I all of that, the other 2 points that were on our deputation application.
Just wondering along with the budget, the question, as I noticed the MLCA was in there too in the minutes. How does that coordinate? Do the MLCA do the water testing through your organization, or do they do it separately?
I believe that's coordination, but Jennifer's better.
Yeah, so my name is Jennifer Gantler. I chair the Stewardship and Environmental Committee, and as another volunteer job, I am on the MLCA, not on the executive, but I am the lake steward. And so we coordinate our efforts so that we don't duplicate each other and we complement each other. I'd be happy to answer a further question, but I do have two further points to go over and as part of this deputation. So I'll just continue then?
Sounds good. Yeah.
So, okay. So the health and beauty of the environment in McKellar Township is integral to supporting the economy of the township and the health of present and future residents who are our children and grandchildren. At the LSAEC November the 10th meeting, we passed a resolution that we proposed to council that copies of the invasive species flyer and the safe voting flyer be distributed with the tax bills as early as possible in 2023. And the estimated cost of producing, making copies of these two flyers would be about $2,500. And that we have still in our 2022 budget. The first flyer is about invasive species, which are increasingly a problem in Ontario Lakes. I recently listened to a webinar in which milfoil was being decreased in Wollaston Lake, that's just south of Bancroft, by very expensive laying of enormous sheets of burlap mat on the lake bottom in order to plunder it. Also, for a few years, I've heard stories from people in Sunridge about the huge effort and expense to remove phragmites from the lake and the lakeshore. In McKellar Township, we are relatively free from invasive species at present, but we need to have everyone knowledgeable about identifying invasive species and knowing how to prevent their spread and knowing how to report these if they're found. The second flyer we would like distributed with the tax information is the on safe boating. It has two sides, one on safe boating and the other on catch and release fishing. This summer we had two near accidents that I'm aware of. There may have been more on the township lakes. So we need to ramp up our campaign to have township residents be aware of safety issues so they will realize the need to help their family, friends, and tenants become aware of boating safety. On the back of the boating safety page is information about increasing the likelihood of fish surviving being caught and released, along with a QR code connecting to a Bass Pro video on best practices for catch and release fishing. And this will help maintain the fish population of the lake. Now, this is already in our budget, the element that I'm really asking for. Other than approval of that, would be also to agree to have these documents go out with the mailing. So that would be two separate sheets of 8.5 by 11. I can just continue going on to number three, and then we can talk about both of them if you'd like.
Well, maybe just clear up a couple things. Maybe Ina could answer this with those sheets of paper. I'm not sure with the envelopes and the what was in the tax bill, so could these two sheets be inserted? Because I know they had an option of one if two couldn't fit. Is there anything else going in the tax bill, or do you have to get a different envelope to include these?
No, we wouldn't have to get a different envelope to include them in with the tax bills. It all depends on... Usually we can get maybe four tax bills to a normal envelope. There's not very many rate payers that have four tax bills coming to them, so putting inserts in is not an issue.
And who would be, just the logistics, who would actually be inserting these? Would that be through the office, or would this... organization do it?
That would be us doing it. They would need to provide them to us, and then when we're stuffing tax bills, we would be the one putting the inserts in.
Okay, does that sound good? You can have both then, by the sound of
it? That's great. I'll just arrange with, I know what date she wants them to have them there in loads of time.
Okay.
Okay, second issue, or third?
Okay, so the MLCA completed a E. coli testing this summer on Armstrong, Gray Owl, Manitowabi, Mary Jane, McKellar, and Moffat Lake. And also we conducted phosphorus and calcium testing for the first time that the MLCA has done that. So the E. coli results are up on the township webpage, and the phosphorus results will be posted on both the MLCA and the township webpage. E. coli testing is important to monitor swimming areas and is conducted throughout the lake. It can also be an indicator of septic issues, as can phosphorus, although there are also many other contributors to higher phosphorus levels. Phosphorus contributes to blooms of blue-green algae, and whether or not we have a bloom of blue-green algae depends on whether or not there is blue-green algae in the lake, and we have documented proof of that from 2 years ago. And it also depends on the amount of phosphorus in the lake and the water temperature of the lake. The provincial water quality objectives state that we need to maintain desirable levels of phosphorus in surface water, which is lake and river water. Because BGA blooms also decrease the amount of oxygen available for other life and decreases the fish population. The Lake Partner Program, we've been sending samples in there, just individual volunteers for the Lake Partner Program for 20 years. And their results put us in the mesotrophic category. So the phosphorus results are in micrograms per liter. And a mesotrophic category is between 10 and 20. And the eutrophic category would be between 20 and 30. So these Lake Partner Program results show us at about 11.5, but the Lake Capacity Study that was done last summer showed us around 18.5. So we really do need to follow up with our own regular testing. It's important to monitor in order to help township residents be aware of keeping the level low and to prevent blue-green algae blooms, which interfere with water for household use, because although there are many different types of algae in the lake, blue-green algae, when it is in a bloom, can also emit a toxin called microcystin, and that is toxic to human and animal life. And so water treatment, when there are BGA blooms present, requires filtering the sediment, decontamination of bacteria with UV treatment, and also nanofiltration to remove most of the toxin microcystin. And this level of water treatment for household use may not be readily available in most residences in the township that have a water line into the lake. So historically, the MLCA runs the sampling, gets the samples to the lab, and there are about 8 to 10 different invoices that come in through the summertime, and MLCA pays those, and then, as far as I understand, comes to the township at the end of the season looking for support and payment of the cost of testing. So I'm coming with an ask with this one, that council pay the MLCA costs incurred for water testing analysis in the township lakes, which totals $4,246.47 by MLCA in 2022. And again, this is also in our 2022 budget that hasn't been spent yet. So I'd be very happy to try to answer any questions you have.
I think if the invoices are coming into the township, that's good to know what's actually being accomplished. And I applaud the going beyond Lake Manitowabing and McCutter Lake into the other lakes as well, doing the studies. the educational material that such a small group puts out is really excellent. I'm just wondering, do you ever get any feedback on the educational material? I know you have guest speakers come in. Does anybody ever respond to what they're receiving?
Yes, we have two email addresses. One's MLCA water testing. We also have, there's an email with the MLCA itself, and I get forwarded those questions. We also have an email with the Lake Stewardship Committee, and that we put on the flyer that went to all the households this summer. And also, I frequently will put announcements and educational information up on the three with Facebook pages for McKellar Township, and I have a lot of questions there as well. Sometimes people get a hold of my phone number and just call me, so that's fine too. But we do have a lot of questions. With the E. coli testing, we didn't have to this year, but in the 2 years previous to that, when I started to be responsible for the sampling, we did have what we call hot spots, where the E. coli levels were very high, above 200. And so we would then approach the people in that area and let them know, you know, that those are higher and how they may be related to septic maintenance and that kind of thing. I'll stop there. I can keep going for a long time.
I know we're over the 10 minutes, but I'm asking the questions here. The ice cap, I'm really concerned because I've watched many of your Zoom meetings, and that seemed to be an issue, the bills that come in. Does that come into your committee, or does that come into the township? The ice cap is going to do a presentation, I think, coming up to council, but I'd be interested in knowing the logistics of because I know you've discussed budgets before, and their ask has increased in the last little while. Should your committee be responsible for ice cap, or should that be a township council decision?
So it was originally, there was an agreement signed between the township and Georgia Bay Biosphere, who runs the ice cap program. And in the fall of 2021, when we were elevated from an ad hoc status to a regular committee status, the ice cap budget was put under our budget. Not that we have, it's just a convenience to put everything environmentally related under one roof in the LSEC budget. So there are two members of the leadership committee who are actively engaged with Ina and with David Bywater from the Georgia Bay Biosphere, and that's Nick Ryland and Tony Best. And so they are looking forward to having a meeting coming up fairly soon to iron out the misunderstandings in the budgeting. And their ask, the GBB ask, did go up by substantially, and so we were trying to come to the bottom of that issue in terms of did the township agree to that increase or not, and that hasn't been resolved yet.
Questions?
Go ahead. Hi, Jennifer. You were mentioning a request of something as $4,000 for the water testing for 2022?
2023. So 2023,
okay.
That will be debating on Thursday night. I have a proposed budget for the Lake Stewardship Committee to look at. So the budget for 2022, I think, is in one of the middle columns there. And on the far right in the document that I sent you is the proposed budget for 2023. But the committee has not finalized that yet. I reached the amount for E. coli testing by pulling back on that a little bit because of the phosphorus testing that started. And the phosphorus testing is based on the same pattern of testing that was done in the Lake capacity study in the summer of 2021. And so that was 12 sites in Lake Manitowabi that encompass all the arms of the lake, and as well as the center area, and also 12 of them are surface samples, and there are additional 6 deep samples in some of those 12 sites that are deep. You can do deep samples there, and then, so that's the pattern that was run in the lake capacity study, and for consistency, I wanted to maintain that sampling pattern. And also the study that MLCA commissioned in 2018 by Ben Clark, he found that he didn't find that there were big differences between the arms of the lake and the center part of the lake, but that was not the case with the lake capacity study. That study is available only on video, but it's on the McKellar Township website under environment. You can see the lake capacity study report on video. So they did find a substantially higher amount of phosphorus in the lake, an average of over 18, which is pushing us up to the top of the mesotrophic level, which is substantially different from the Lake Partner Program. The Lake Partner Program results are very slow in coming, so we've been waiting 18 months for the May 2021 sampling results, and so in order to have a timely assessment of what's happening in the lake, I feel that we need to do our own sampling as well.
Yeah, thanks for that explanation. But in the information you provided, move that council pay the MLCA for the costs incurred for water testing analysis in township lakes by MLCA in 2022. Have you been paid for the water testing that has taken place in 2022?
No.
Okay, so the amount here is $4,246.47, and in the budget we had approved $5,000 for the, it looks like the Manitowabing Lake, I guess this is the water testing. So it's an already approved budget for item in 2022 of $5,000, so there's no need to request council to pay for that. It's already been approved in the 2022 budget.
Okay, I'll let the treasurer of MLCA know, and he will send Roshan and
the just one request here. In one of the flyers that you're sending out, if you could please include, because the OPP is trying to promote citizen online reporting, that in addition to the 188 number for to report any unsafe boating infraction, that you include for citizen online reporting, which is a very user-friendly process on the OPP website.
Okay, is that Mike? Your picture is so tiny I can't see.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Mike Hackman, yes.
Do you mind emailing me the text of that, Mike?
Yes, I can. And you mentioned that you started measuring the calcium this year. I think that's fantastic. And I looked there. We will be discussing later on the Aquatic Environment Report by the Georgian Bay Biosphere, and they do mention calcium as well. And do you know what the amount that should be, like what is the ideal amount of calcium that should be showing up in a lake that it has sufficient amount for the small creatures that require the calcium?
I thought I had all the points at my fingertips, but that one I don't have. I know that our calcium level is lower than that's usually required for quagga mussels, and I want to say 6, but I'm just not 100% sure. I can email that information to you, Mike. But I know our calcium levels were lower than the invasive species study that was run by FOCA this year wanted for lakes participating in that study, because they were specifically looking for lakes that might house quite the muscles, but because they can reinforce anyway. So I do know that our calcium levels are on the low side, but I can send you the specifics.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments from council? Thank you very much for the presentation. The second presentation, David R. Jones, installation of Bell 5G equipment. I don't know whether he's here or he's online. Roberts, Hardy Crescent Road. If you want to use the mic over there.
Good evening, Council. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you tonight. I'm appearing on behalf of 279-2311 Ontario Limited. It is a corporation owned by my wife and I, Moira, and our partners, Rob and Reagan DeBoer. We are the neighbors on either side of the 80-acre parcel of land that we're speaking about tonight. And I just want to thank Carly for help putting all of this together and telling me how to address council and anything else. First time I've ever done something like this, so appreciate it. I think you all have in your packages basically what we're trying to achieve. We purchased the land. There was no survey. This piece of property seems to have been the last one sold as Frank Hardy developed the south end and the north end of Burnett's Road, and I'm not sure who did what, and the historical records are kind of interesting as you talk to different folks. But the 80 acres seems to be the result of what's left over after everything was surveyed on the north side and things were surveyed on the south side, and it's just this last piece of land. So when we purchased the property, there was no survey, formal survey to be found. And we put in a request, and it was approved at the June 14th council meeting, application number B02/2022 McKellar for a severance proposal. And so part of that severance proposal is that we don't survey the property. So in the process of doing that, IBW surveyors, and I apologize, folks, if there's some communication issue with the consent sketch that some of you may have versus the one that we finalized. That's an error with the planning board and the changeover from LE Mon surveyors to IBW surveyors. They got the wrong sketch in there. It was a process, but the one that I've included in my package is the one that we're working from. And so as our surveyors are doing the survey of the property, they come up to an issue. And I'm not here to point the fingers. I'm not certainly trying to bridge up any faster. Or the question is, how do we resolve this? And the issue is that the property line that borders Hardy Crescent puts it within 10 feet of a residential dwelling and about 3.5 feet of an existing garage. And there is simply no way to get to the home or the garage without accessing that road allowance. The alternative would be to put a whole new roadway in off of Burnett's Road, cut down a mess of trees, go all the way around the back because you can't drive over a septic tank, and you still don't have but 3 feet to get between the road allowance and the garage, and it just doesn't make any sense. So I took the liberty of calling all the councillors to come out and invite you to come and take a look physically, because it's very difficult to show this on a piece of paper. But if I could direct you to the two photos on the colored page in your paperwork. Okay. That's a picture of my daughter standing, pointing to 2.7 meters away from the corner of the house. That is the side of the road allowance that is 20 meters wide on Hardy Crescent. And the surveyor didn't put a survey mark there, obviously in the middle of the concrete. Nice big orange mark in the middle of your concrete, that wouldn't be too good. And also her foot, 1.7 meters away from the corner of the garage, and that's indicated on this sketch from the surveyors. It's not something I created. It's from IBW surveyors. And they're a full stop position right now. They're like, we can't go forward and tell you that your property is okay because it borders on over onto township land. And the required setbacks aren't there in order to make it work. And so if I can refer you to the consent sketch, the correct one, in my apologies for the confusion, if we take a look at Hardy Crescent, where it comes off at the south end of Burnett's Road, that is the cottage lot. There's a little beige wording cottage, pretty small there. That will be retained as part of our seventh proposal. This has already been approved. That's the building that we're talking about in those photos and the referenced garage. If you go in on the unopened road allowance, Hardy Crescent, if you were driving in, that's actually the driveway of the property and has been since the 70s. It's historical use. Again, I'm not here to point your fingers and say somebody messed up, but the question is, how do we deal with it, right? And so if you take a look, we also own 279-2311, also owns Block A, and Township owns Block B. So as I look at this diagram, it seems evident to me that there is no use for 20 meters wide by about 400 meters long, an unusual shape of land that you can't do anything with, except to the adjacent landowner. So we own the property on the north side of Hardy Crescent, that's Block A. We own the property on the south side, that's the retained land and the land that we're trying to work on a subdivision proposal, not a subdivision, a severance proposal. And if you go to the north end of Hardy Crescent, the township owns Block B on the west side, and we own proposed Lot 3 on the east side. Again, 20 meters wide, 400 meters long, it's approximately 2 acres if I draw it out on the West Perry Sound geographic network, it's about 2 acres. But basically useless land to anybody else. And the other thing I'd like to point out, when you take a look at our proposed severance proposal that was approved by council, there are no back lots requiring that road allowance to remain in township ownership to potentially provide access to a future back lot that would be created, because our severance proposal doesn't create those lots. All of the lots that we have in our severance proposal have the minimum 60 meters frontage under Burnett's Road required under the township bylaws. So we're a bit of a standstill. My daughter is a teacher with North Bay Manitowoc District School Board. She works at Parrystown Public School. They specifically moved up here in order to get jobs rather than create their careers, get some seniority down in southwestern Ontario when I went to University of Windsor. And my son, in-law, Peter, is a police officer with the OPP in Birchwell. They intend to and will be purchasing proposed Lot 1 as soon as we can get it delivered. And they'll be building their forever home. And you can appreciate that what that means is that there's already a trail built through that woods where Grandpa and Grandma are going to have their kids, grandkids run through the property. Our intention with proposed Lot 2 is to leave it in its retained state. We are not selling it. We are not developing it. The entire purpose of what we're doing here is to tie up the land for Rob and Rachel DeVore and ourselves and future generations to enjoy in its present state, along with the lake quality that we had visions of this property being severed into three huge Muskoka-type cottages. And after all the work that we've done, we didn't want that. So we're at a standstill. We can't finish our severance proposal. We only have 2 years to do that from the date that council approved it. we literally cannot move forward until we get an issue unless the surveyors don't know which way to proceed. So I'm appealing to council tonight. I'm more than happy to answer any questions. But I'm appealing to council tonight because I believe that as per section 6.3 of bylaw 201124, thank you, Mayor Moore, for pointing that out, there is an opportunity to sell after the council decides that this might serve as land. There is an opportunity to sell that land to the adjacent landowners, and if we could find some way to work together and expedite that process so that we can move forward, get this subdivision severance proposal, subdividing the land, however you want to refer it, done, and so the lots can be registered for the spring so that we can apply for a building permit to the township to start to break ground and move forward. What we propose to do is a positive revenue positive situation. We're already paying IBW. We'd like to survey Hardy Crescent. If that's appropriate with council, we'll just pay for that. So there's no cost to council to survey the land so that you can figure out what you're selling. If there's some appraisal fee required, we're happy to pay that appraisal. The point of this is to make it revenue positive to the council and relatively short time span. So you have my suggestions there. I'm very happy to answer the questions, and again, thank you for your time.
Good. Council, are there any questions? I have a couple, but I'm giving you a chance.
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, with Block A, how important is Block A to you?
Block A is a separate registered parcel. It's its own lot of 2.5 acres.
The reason I'm questioning is that, as you say, Township owns Block B, and if you purchased Hardy's Crescent, it bumps up against the retainer, but also bump up against Block A.
We own Block A.
Right.
Okay.
So that's one big lot then. Would you be looking at severing those two to make two lots? Or
no.
Would it all remain retained?
We would keep Block A as a separate. It's already registered on its own lot, so that our severance proposal doesn't deal with Block A at all. I'm just noting to council that we own that piece of land. The south end of Hardy Crescent would be added to the retained cottage lot. The north end of Hardy Crescent would be added to proposed lot 3, and we're not interested in purchasing, and I'm not even asking council to declare Block B as surplus land. It's very, very low-lying land, and it's wet, I'll say, 9 months of the year. Not a particularly good building lot.
Yeah, and that's why I'm questioning it. I guess if council wanted to do anything with Block B, as you say, it's low. I drove through there the other night. And you're assuring us that block or proposed lot 3 has 60 meters on Burnett's Road already?
Yes, that's the way that we sent it in as a proposed sketch to council that was approved, and that's the instructions that I've given to our surveyors. And there is a survey mark out on Burnett's Road at the survey mark end of the north side of Hardy Crescent, and 60 meters north on Burnett's Road, there's another survey mark where we're proposing to draw that red line south of the pond. So yeah, we have the 60 meters already.
So you have the 60 without Hardy's Crescent being sold to you?
Yes, we would.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this proposal wouldn't have been able to be passed as of the June council meeting.
Right.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. Well, it's a different configuration than the June council meeting, so
I'm not sure how that happened. My apologies on that again, but
well, I'm just wanting a clarification, too, through the planning board and through council, because the first time we saw this updated sketch, when you presented it to us in your letter, we didn't get anything from the planning board saying that it had been reconfigured.
See, I don't understand that, because prior to the June council meeting, I verified with Patrick at the planning board that this sketch that you're now seeing was the one that was in front of council. I didn't appear in front of council on June 6th, because I actually didn't know we were on the agenda. Somehow that got missed. So, again, my apologies for this, but I did everything in my power to say to the surveyors and to the planning board that the right sketch was submitted to council, so they messed it up.
Yeah, that's just, we had the study done as well through Ted Davidson Consultants.
Yes.
And it was on the wrong sketch, I guess.
The study on the Ted Davidson's response was only on the waterfront lot, and the lot lines on that have not changed, so it didn't impact. And I checked that with the planning board before we finalized that.
But his proposal dealt with, or his report dealt with all of the lots and what you were doing on that property, right? Not just the waterfront. There were comments that he'd put in, even about the floodplain area, that large pond. In his report, it dealt with the whole piece of property.
Yes.
But it was apparently on a different survey that he was looking at, survey sketch, because he wasn't dealing with the large piece, the lot addition. It was just a triangular shape for the lot addition that was going over to your neighbors.
Yeah.
And now it's a huge piece of property that's going over to your neighbors. So his comments were on another sketch. And I think you'd mentioned that to me on the phone as well. That
yeah, again, it all boils down to powers outside of me that shared sketches and I wasn't aware of it, so again, I apologize. I don't think that the recommendations that Ted Davidson's report makes vary in any material way with where we draw the lot line.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no development proposal on any of this property. That's the whole point.
Since you mentioned Lot B is rather low, which it is, and proposed Lot 3 already has the 60 meters, would you be amenable to leaving that for the township to access through the Hardy's Road Allowance, which they own already, as a better entrance than maybe off Burnett's Road? And it really wouldn't make any difference to Lot 3.
Yes, my understanding was from Carly that council would rather sell all of Hardy's Crescent rather than subdivide it. So we originally only wanted to buy the south end of Hardy's Crescent, where it intersects basically opposite the line between Block A and Block B, and the line between proposed Lot 3 and the cottage lot. So I'm coming to council tonight following her recommendation to purchase all of Hardy Crescent, but if you'd rather retain the north end, so we're now talking about we're trying to purchase 1 acre, not 2 acres, roughly,
mm-hmm.
That's fine.
I'll put that out to council and what your thoughts were.
Sure. Thank you.
Again, to council who visited the site to see for access points, it makes sense. I know it's a higher elevation, certainly, on Hardy Crescent coming in from that end, but it is rather low, as you say, coming off Burnett's, to try to put something in there, yeah, whether it be used for a future park or whatever. But
it seems to me, Brad, that...
Did you get your mic on?
I think so. Can you hear me? No? Yeah, turned off. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, good. It seems to me that A, it would save you some money, approximately half, I don't know how much money we're talking, and if you're willing to convey it to the township or whatever, or no, we don't have to, that's already the township property, there's no negative, I think, associated to you. From my point of view, I think it makes sense, and that's probably the most acceptable solution without causing any problem, because it's already a township property on lot. I get all the lot numbers mixed up here on Block B. So if you're agreeable to that, I would support that, that's for sure. So
yeah, I'm fine with whichever council and the applicant decide. I don't know, should council have a site visit to walk that Hardy Crescent at the north end and then get a feel whether it... that property would be of any value to the township in the future, and if it isn't, well, then maybe it may be of value to the applicant.
I did walk the property with Brad approximately 2 weeks ago. I don't really remember, something like that. And it was fairly snow-covered, and certainly the low lie of the land was quite noticeable. I didn't wade in there because I didn't have boots on, but... No, it makes sense to me, all of this, from having walked it, and Brad invited me out, and so I went to have a look. So,
I invited all the councils out, just to be very clear. I wouldn't ask council to make a decision on something I haven't seen, because I can't take two dimensions and make it into three dimensions, but I understand that you guys have got a lot more history around this area than I do. We came in 2013, and we will be making this our retirement home. So that was the invitation to come and look.
Sure.
That was it.
I'm sorry, Kevin, what is it?
Yeah, I agree that we want to increase the options of making Block B as practical as possible, and if we can have that as one of the options, not only expanding the size of Block B, but also having that as an additional entrance wing, I think that that's probably the wisest decision on behalf of the municipality. The one question would be that. Looking at if that's an option of not going through a cash process for Hardy's Crescent, the south end of it, but to be able to trade a portion of Block A to increase the size of Block B for that portion of the south end of Hardy's Crescent, just to increase the township's, to increase the size of Block B. Something for consideration. Don't need an answer now, but just something for consideration.
And I couldn't speak to that because I haven't even thought of discussing that with our partners, obviously. But let me walk you through driving a car up Burnett's Road. And this just literally came to me now. Okay, drive a car up Burnett's Road and turn right onto Hardy's Crescent in order to get into Block B. That's a hairpin turn that nobody's going to want to make, especially in the winter. And then you've got a challenge if you're going to make a township road. I'm not trying to get to the roads committee here, but how in the heck do you get a snowplow down that thing and turn it around without cutting huge swaths of trees down? It's just a question.
I don't think there's any intention of turning this into a municipal roadway for public access. This is just to increase the options for the municipality on Block B for future opportunities.
If I own Block B, I wouldn't do a hairpin turn to get into the property. I would find a way to get in off Burnett's Road, much safer for exit out of the property more than anything else. But whatever council decides is fine. We're not interested in. We're really only trying to figure out how we solve this setback from the road allowance at the south end. Sorry, Debbie, I think I didn't mind.
That's okay. That's all right. You did call me, and I went out on my own there and had a quick look. And if you would be willing just to buy that one portion of it, that would be all right with you, you were saying, instead of the whole crescent?
That was our original proposal to Carly.
Yeah.
And she suggested the council probably wouldn't be amenable to splitting it and would want us to purchase the whole. So
yeah.
We followed her recommendation, and that's why we're in front of council tonight asking to purchase all of Burnett, or Hardy Crescent. But if council's coming back to what we originally thought of, then that's okay.
No, that would be fine with me. I'm just curious as to why... that was thought that the council would have to sell the whole crescent. Does anybody know?
I have to ask Carly. I'm not sure.
Just in previous experience, usually when road allowances are being sold to municipalities, it's usually all or nothing. So that's the assumption I made, but it's all council's decision.
No, I think that would work better for both parties if you just took that one portion. If the rest of council's in agreement.
Yeah, well, it's sounding positive that they would have to declare surplus if you say go through that bylaw and stop up close and sell and have it surveyed. And that could be a transaction moving forward. As you say, time is of the essence here. I'm not sure when this is coming back as far as your consent conditions being met for the rezoning.
Well, we have 2 years, if I may, Mayor.
Yeah.
We have 2 years, it used to be only 1 year, but with COVID they extended it to 2 years, from the June 14th approval date. We would like to not wait that long, because that means my daughter's got to wait 2 more summers to build her house. So we'd like to see if we can fast-track this, I guess, to get a decision on Hardy Crescent, whatever portion in order to allow the surveyors to proceed, because they're going to register the surveys and the new lots as one package. And it doesn't make sense to do it once and then come back to it a second time before we can move forward. So they're kind of at a standstill, and obviously we can't apply for a septic permit, we can't apply for a building permit until we can get a lot registered.
No, I hear what you're saying. I know we talked about that too as one package. I haven't heard it from our planner yet that it wouldn't be a lot addition. That going back through the planning board, I'm not sure what your surveyor has told you, and I'm not hearing the other side yet whether it has to be a lot addition or just all done at once. So I think we have to get that clarified as well.
So I asked that question because I didn't know the answer. It was more of a procedural question in terms of how long does this take? And he said if council provides the direction, whether it's tonight or a future council meeting or something, to say yes, you can purchase a whole or part. He said we would survey it, and we offered to pay that as part of our current ongoing survey for the severance, rather than council make a request, because you guys have go to the bottom of the list. We're trying to slide this in with what they're already doing. And he said when we went and registered it with the planning board, that the council minutes approving the purchase, it would all be registered as part of the severance proposal approved back in June. So I challenged him on that. I said, so you don't have to have a separate planning board meeting, a separate approval in order to get this one little strip of land. He goes, no, we can put it all in the same, because they're selling to the landowner that is currently surveying the property.
I'm not
a planning expert, but
neither am I. But in the interim, we just to confirm that with the planner, that's all, that you can skip that one step. It makes sense, but I'm not sure legally that is the way you do it. So
sure.
We'd have to look into that. But. Well, it sounds good. I think we're on the same page.
What's the process? We have to declare a surplus first, is that?
Yes.
Yeah. And what's the process that's involved in doing that? Like, is there involved? Okay, sorry, is that in the package?
It's okay. A resolution, yeah. Okay. There's a bylaw that goes with it that was there for you. And,
okay.
And then we have to stop off and close it.
Okay.
And make sure that the public is aware of that.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody drives through it now. Having walked through it, I wouldn't drive through there, so. But nevertheless, yeah, I understand.
Well, it's interesting because, as you say, it's been used as a driveway, but it's a township property. And
yeah, the driveway ends at the garage.
Yeah.
It's just a trail. It's open.
You know, we have many road allowances that have never been opened, and similar to this, and there is obviously a liability involved in any township property, but thankfully nothing has happened there. And hopefully we can get this all cleared up. Well, thanks for coming out tonight, and certainly to be in touch through Ina.
Okay.
And
so do I have to make a motion? Do you have to make a motion?
No, I think that's all we need. We have your suggestion here, and I think you're agreeable to the latest that came through with just part of it being sold. And,
yep.
So we'll follow up with the next steps and get back to you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Council. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Resolution 22-507, moved by Councillor Keckman, second by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the deputation from Jennifer Gent Fuller, Chair of the East Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee. We'll ask Axie Lael to be added to that.
Yes,
well.
Yes, we should.
Yeah. Carried.
And resolution 22-508, moved by Councillor Zulak, seconded by Councillor Kekkonen. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Brad Roberts regarding interest in purchasing the road allowance known as Hardy Crescent. And even though it's not on here, as I said, we will be in touch with you. And we're just receiving the report that you presented. Thank you. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Just generic on the agenda, committee of the whole, motion to review a previous motion, and then we have adoption of minutes of the previous meeting, November 15th, 2022, the special meeting of council. The resolution 22-509, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, seconded by Councillor Zulak, be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby approved the minutes of the November 15th, 2022 special inaugural meeting of council. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Planning matters. We have 16.1, the Solid Waste Appeal. And included in the package, previous notes from council, email from Patrick Towns from MHBC regarding the installation of the driveway, draft bylaw, draft consent agreement, minutes of settlement, an email from Jennifer Bigger, Russell Christie, LLP, regarding Bill 23. I'll open this up for discussion from the council. You've seen the entire package, and I realize that it's transitioning from one council to another, so a lot has happened prior to this, but they're reaching the stage now through mediation, I believe, so it won't necessarily have to go to the Ontario Land Tribunal, but I've opened it up to council. If you have any concerns with what the lawyer has sent us, if you're willing to go with this consent agreement, if you think everything is finalized, if you still have some outstanding questions.
Since Greg is here, David, could we ask him a question regarding one of the things from Patrick Towns?
I think that's an excellent idea.
Okay. So Patrick Towns, the solicitor there, he says the Public Works Department was contacted to confirm that the entrance location off of Fox Farm Road is appropriate, and this was confirmed. So did they call you, Greg, and speak with you?
I don't recall that.
Okay, is he saying? Mm-hmm. He's saying that he spoke with you and that the entrance location was confirmed that it was all right.
I don't recall looking at this location.
Okay.
I have to clarify as well. I'm just wondering here because throughout it's called a driveway from the applicant, and yet it's pretty obvious even for the consent agreement that it refers to it as an access road, as a private road, and which would lead to private driveways, but it is a private road, so I'm wondering if that should be cleared up as well. And also the question has arisen regarding the Fox Farm Road, and it's very confusing when that road was put in there. I realize it's an extension of the road allowance, but it veered off the road allowance further up the road as it went in and as that area developed. And part of it, if you look at the geography network, certainly, and even through the different diagrams, part of it looks to be on the Solway property. The road is accessing there. And I'm wondering if anybody can answer, and maybe staff has the answer, I don't know, whether this property, the Solway property, was ever part of the original access agreement, the road agreement that we had with the original developers. I think there were the Fergusons and others who developed in there. And there was quite an extensive road agreement years ago when they first developed. And they were all to be party of it because they had needed access to get in there. And I'm not sure if this property does. I just want to make sure it's figured out that those people who are beyond the Solway property and are using this road have a deeded access, and that the Solway property, the new owners, whoever, this is part of the retained, but that their access could be cut off at some point. I'm not sure if the legality is there, whether it's actually where it should be. I don't think it's on the road allowance. It seems to veer off a bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that should be clarified as well, because anybody purchasing the property would assume, I guess, that they can travel on that road. And I've heard horror stories of people later finding out that they don't have deeded access. They're not a party to it. So I want that clarified, that all the people in there and future purchasers will still have access. And then there's a question, of course, of the private road, the condition of it. Because before, there were conditions that somehow disappeared, I think, from our documents, that there'd be a 20-meter at the entrance throughout for the private road. Now, the road doesn't have to be 20 meters the whole way, obviously, but it should have that distance width at the beginning. And in this particular case, from what I've heard, the unfortunate thing is there was the Riverstone environmental study that was done. And again, we need clarification on this, but the driveway is already in. I visited the area today. It's all private property, so I didn't go in. It's all chained. But the driveway is there, and there's a question now whether the driveway has infringed or is too close to some of the wetlands that are in there and some of the water courses. So some of this has happened already. And I guess the big question of this whole application is who checks what is actually being done in there. Riverstone gave a report, and our consent agreement says that Riverstone has to approve that all the conditions are being met. But it's sort of out of our hands. If Riverstone does it or not, I'm not sure if that's their responsibility. So we have to clarify that as well. We can put all the conditions in we want, things they have to follow, but who knows if they're being followed. And now that we've lost through Bill 23, apparently, according to our solicitor, the ability to do site plan control, which was for our whole township, she's putting this in through the consent agreement. Whether it has as much teeth as a site plan control, I'm not sure. We need experts again to give us that opinion. And she's certainly changed the consent agreement and added all kinds of clauses relating to the conditions that Riverstone said should be imposed on the property. And I'm just wondering if council begins looking at those conditions and whether it covers all of the areas from Riverstone. And that's the other question to everyone, of course, too. Have you looked at the Riverstone property or environmental study? And do we just take the lawyer's statement that she's included everything from the study, or should we be looking at the study in more detail as well? Now, two of us are new to this council. We're not, well, three, I guess, probably predated the other two. There's some homework to do here, and whether this agreement, and I know they're saying time is of the essence, and they want to get this done so they can get the property severed and sold, but I still think there are a lot of questions. Council, Councillor Zuline?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of questions that, for me anyways, that need to be answered, especially just for instance, that one thing with where Patrick Towns said he spoke with the road super, and so if that's not true, then I question other things. I need to get some more information.
I'm concerned, too, with this, the way it's being done here, and I'm just not familiar with the approach. They've got a bylaw to amend the zoning bylaw, and within there, there's still some things that have to be clarified. This is a bylaw that we would be contemplating. It talks in Section 2, for instance, or Number 2, at the end of Section 16.52 for special provisions. And I think at one point it was up, they changed it to 17. It looks like it's back to 16.52, but I think we already have 16.53, 54, 55, and 56. So that would be incorrect. It would have to go after the 56, I believe, special provisions, unless something has changed in our zoning. Also questioning the single detached dwelling, associated accessory buildings and structures permitted on part of lots 24 and 25 concession 9 within the special provision zone. My understanding is that if they're sold, there'll be one retained and three separate lots. They would each need to have that proviso, I would believe, to have a single detached dwelling and associated accessory buildings. The way this is worded, it sounds like it's the one big piece of property and not the, the future lots. As mentioned earlier, our consent agreement refers to it as access off a private right-of-way, so a private road. And yet, the documents coming from the applicant's side are saying it's a driveway. Even the survey suggests that it's a driveway. And I think that's inaccurate. The reference to Fox Farm Road as well, this is under Special Provisions 3.1A. Again, confusing because Fox Farm Road takes a 90-degree turn at one point. And we can talk about our ancestors for that, I guess, but it doesn't clarify whether it's a road that leads in or the road that turns to the left and goes east. And I think the distinction should be made. I know it's all called Fox Farm Road, but I think the... should be a little more specific on which part it's referring to. It says the retained lot fronts onto Fox Farm Road. Well, it does on the south end, and it does on the west end. And actually, as I said before, it cuts across. It doesn't just touch it. It actually is surrounded by it. The Fox Farm Road, at least the road they put in, it is now called Fox Farm, I suppose. Looks like it goes right across the Solway property. Also on 3.2, I'm just not sure if that's a typo. It said Riverstone Environmental Solutions did a study dated December 21st, 2022. I assume that's 2021, but I'm not sure. And that's our, in our consent agreement that the lawyer is suggesting we send to them for consideration. This has to go back to their lawyers, their planners, to see if they agree with the wording we put into it. I'm just not sure if we're at that stage yet. Schedule D, Section 3E, it talks about regular inspection and monitoring shall be conducted by a qualified professional to the satisfaction of the municipality to ensure that the structural integrity and continued functioning of the sediment control measures is maintained. proper installation is not the only action necessary to satisfy the mitigation requirements. I'm wondering about the regular inspection and monitoring could also apply to the roadways that they're putting in and the driveways. I realize it's going to be private, but if they've already put things in without following the procedure suggested by Riverstone, then I just worry about the future. And of course, those private roads, at some point, as we've encountered before, people come forward, people who buy these properties, and would like the private roads brought up and assumed by the township. And I realize we'll be using the argument that they have to bring it up to the municipal standard before it's ever assumed. But what are they starting with? What kind of a road? And is there access for, even though we put in the agreement that they won't always have access, for fire rescue or EMS or anything that might happen in there, again, they expect it when they end up in those sites. So I'm just wondering, again, how involved we become on the requirements that we put on them. And the other thing is the Ontario Lands Tribunal, that they seem to anticipate, maybe that's part of the process. They're creating the document for the OLT, part of the, would come out of the mediation. And I'm not sure, again, until we get the advice from a professional, whether that's the usual approach. The OLT write its own clauses, or do they rely upon the applicant to write the clauses for them and then agree to it or disagree? So who do we turn to? This particular application, we have some people on Zoom, and I'll put it out to council, rather than let this issue go and leave with the questions at the end, if council wishes. They may not say anything, I don't know, but I know there are people who have talked in the past about this particular application, and they may wish to speak if council is agreeable while we're dealing with it, or do you want to wait for the question period?
Makes sense to do it then.
Okay, I'll ask anybody in the audience, first of all, with this particular one, or anybody on Zoom who wishes to speak to the Solway application, and maybe some suggestions for council where to go up from this point. Fair enough. Leave it up to council. Where do you go with this? She wants it expedited. Yes, who's on there?
Hello?
Yeah, Reg.
Go ahead, Reg.
Okay. Sorry, I tried to get on sooner there, but I my technology for this isn't very good. So if you can hear me, I agree with everything the mayor has said on this proposal here. There's a lot more work needs to be done before there can be any kind of settlement. As far as the tribunal, Solways have already launched an appeal to the tribunal, and then Solways suggested mediation, so the tribunal has agreed. But it's already before the tribunal, so that's why everything has to be through the tribunal. Does that answer your question of the tribunal?
Yes, everything's through them, but if mediation, that's prior to going to tribunal again, right?
Yes, the tribunal agreed to the parties mediating before even going to the tribunal. If it can be mediated, then there wouldn't even be a hearing. But the tribunal has to sign off on what the zoning says in it.
Right. I guess I'm just trying to clarify how the mediation process works. we don't really talk to the other party. We're talking through our solicitor, and the solicitor is offering suggestions what to put in the agreement. Should we be talking to our solicitor before we talk to the other parties?
Probably. I would bring up all the concerns to our solicitor first.
Okay, council's opinions?
Yeah, I think that Bridge is suggesting, and I touched on it too, Dave, that yeah, obviously we want, there's concerns that you've brought up, and that maybe they should be sent back to our lawyer for a review and recommendation. I'm not sure if they can do that by our next council meeting, but that could be a goal.
It would be January before we come back.
And I could just.
It's Ted Davidson.
I really don't want to get involved in this right now, but I'm listening. I apologize, and I really wonder why the planners or the applicants and the township and the lawyer of the township aren't here at this meeting. It would be my suggestion that when you're trying to make a mediated settlement, that if council has questions, they should put them directly to the people who are suggesting the settlement. In my long history in McKellar, I have seen situations where, for example, we have 20-meter right-of-ways to properties that are transferred to the newly created lots, just so that in the future, if those people on the 20-meter right-of-way wanted to upgrade to a municipal standard, that the township might have an opportunity to take that over for winter maintenance, etc., etc. Here, I'm not sure what we have. We have a driveway, apparently, over someone else's property to these three new created lots, plus the retained lots. I did look at the air photos and the environmental report of Mr. Mayor and members of council, and I see that the right-of-way deviates on perhaps onto the Solway property down Fox Farm Road. And that should be probably considered in any consent agreement with respect to this, because the people who have Silver Fox, Gray Fox, and whatever Fox is down there are going to have that legal right-of-way, which they may not have right now because the right-of-way deviates. There are also, with respect to some concerns with respect to buffers, etc., from wetlands, and now that the municipality no longer has site plan control, you may want to include in the consent agreement some site alteration policies or requirements as well as site. And a more specific outline in the zoning bylaw of where these wetlands are and the setback. But that's only my opinion. The sad part of it is, what I feel, is that your planners and your lawyers like to discuss this mediated settlement with council. That's all I have to say right now, unless there's any questions.
No, I appreciate that information, and I agree we should get together and go over these concerns. You mentioned the site alteration. I think in one piece of correspondence we had, it was mentioned that we don't have a site alteration bylaw, and that it wouldn't apply to the driveway, just the buildings. So again, we need clarification on that, because to my way of thinking, certainly it is an alteration when you're putting in a roadway. You're making changes to the environment. But again, would you recommend that that's something that council will look at, maybe a site alteration bylaw, as opposed to now that site plan control is gone.
I would, given that site plan control, and remember, site plan control only applied in those areas that were adjacent to environmental protection areas, like fish habitat, as well as in the deer yard. It doesn't affect the rest of the town that are outside of those areas. But site alteration is defined in the provincial policy statement as grading, alteration of the landform, and removal of natural vegetation. And that would be, and that bylaw, the site alteration bylaw, is done pursuant to the municipal act, not the planning act. So there's more teeth in it, in effect, with respect to site alteration. And with respect to other matters, we could remember, Mr. Mayor, back to OPA number 6. Camp Manitowoc in land just to the south of this, there was a 20-meter right-of-way required for Luigi's Lane, I think it's called now, and that gave access directly to those properties. The same should be considered here as a good planning measure to ensure that in the future, if people on that right-of-way wanted to improve it, have it brought up to municipal standards so that the municipality would take it over, of which I'm sure the municipality doesn't want it over. But there's an opportunity for them to at least approach council with respect to that. Here we have a driveway that is outside of all these three lots being created that I don't think the owners of these lots will have any rights to.
Okay, thanks for your information. Certainly consider that as we move forward.
Can I say something again, Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Councilor Zunak had talked about the access being approved by the road superintendent and questioned the integrity of the planner in respect to this because he's never contacted. I also question the new drawing that has been submitted and all the documentation back and forth within the agenda package for the council. There doesn't seem to be anything in there that tells me that Riverstone even addressed any of the issues again. Is it Riverstone or is it the planner that has done this? They say they contacted Riverstone, but there's nothing documented.
Good question, and going forward too, because it's in this consent agreement now as well that Riverstone would be the agency that would check to see that their suggestions were being enforced, but I'm not sure, again, if that's their authority to do that. Thanks for the input, and I guess going forward, we'll certainly be in touch with our solicitor and try to get the parties together. Maybe they can come to a meeting through Zoom or in person, and I'm not trying to write a resolution for you there.
Get ahead of you.
Am I off to you?
No.
Just pausing, waiting for the resolution to be written. Mm. We have resolution 22-510, moved by Councillor Peckman, second by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the correspondence, draft bylaw, draft consent agreement, and minutes of settlement for the Solway appeal with the Ontario Land Tribunal, OLT, and further, Council directs staff to arrange a meeting with the Township lawyer and Township planner to address concerns regarding the consent agreement. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.